Sometimes, the smallest things link pieces of a puzzle together and ignite those connections in our mind. A single detail, a stray word, a fleeting image. Once the seedling of a link takes root, it grows, deepening and intertwining until it becomes impossible to shake off. But these links can also be red herrings. Clues and paths that lead nowhere, except into more speculation and confusion. The challenge lies in discerning which threads to follow and which to leave untouched. The bait, however, can be too tempting not to chase. In 1977, Northern California was moving away from the Zodiac Killer. He had been dormant for 3 years. His messages, codes, and ciphers lay silent. There were no more brutal murders attributed to this killer. This fact greatly relieved the population of California. He was, however, still a hunted man. Detectives, investigators, and all those close to the investigation, past and present, wanted to see the Zodiac caught and imprisoned. And those connections just kept on coming. Dave Peterson was a police reporter for the Vallejo Times-Herald during the period the Zodiac carried out his murders. Like many other reporters, the crimes of this unknown individual appalled yet fascinated him. Peterson tracked the case intently through the Zodiac's active years and well into the silent years that followed. In October 1970, fellow reporter Paul Avery of the San Francisco Chronicle received a letter from a man in Northern California. The man drew his attention to a 4-year-old murder case, fearing it was the work of the Zodiac Killer. It led Avery to Riverside County in Southern California and the brutal murder of 18-year-old Sherry Jo Bates in 1966. This is a case we discussed in detail in episode 8 of this series. It was a vicious killing that took the life of a teenage girl who had everything to live for. Sherry Jo was a student at Riverside City College. On Sunday, October 30th, she drove her distinctive green Volkswagen Beetle to the college library, parked, and went inside. Sherry Jo was never seen alive again. Her car was where she had left it. Her windows were rolled down. Her books were on the passenger seat, and the keys dangled from the ignition. The car had been tampered with, so it wouldn't start. Sherry Jo was found by the groundsman at around 6 a.m. the following morning. Her battered body was lying on the ground in a dirt alleyway between two empty houses on the college campus just around the corner from the library. She had been stabbed multiple times as she fought desperately for her life. On March 13th the following year, a letter arrived at the Los Angeles Times. Believed to be an authentic letter from the Zodiac, contained a chilling sentence.
I do have to give them credit for stumbling across my Riverside activity, but they're only finding the easy ones. There are a hell of a lot more down there.
The letter was widely regarded as the Zodiac's confession to the murder of Sherry Jo Bates. But this has long been in debate. Just weeks earlier, Paul Avery had published a detailed article on the Zodiac Killer and the possible connections to the murder of Sherry Jo. The Zodiac's letter may have been a confession or a gleeful acceptance of blame for a brutal crime that wasn't his. The Riverside police have always felt Sherry Jo was not murdered by the Zodiac. The FBI and other investigative agencies have not been so sure. It was this controversy and uncertainty that led Dave Peterson to Riverside in the early 70s to investigate for himself. He wanted to see if he could find out anything more about Sherry Joe's murder and possible links to the Zodiac. He spoke with staff at the Riverside City College Library, the last place Sherry Joe was seen alive. What he found out was not what he was expecting. The library staff told Peterson they had their own theory on who had killed Sherry Joe Bates. At the time of her murder, an English student at the college was working with them as a library assistant. He was 25 years old and a young man that caused concern among the team. It was concern that had escalated into a deep unease. Some staff members were convinced he was the individual who took Sherry Joe's life on that night. Upon entering the library, Ross Mercer Stephen Sullivan was not someone you would miss easily. He was over 6 feet tall and weighed around 300 pounds. He had a distinct style, choosing to wear a military-style jacket and heavy boots everywhere he went. But it was his mannerisms that had caused the most unrest with the staff team. Peterson was told Sullivan was strange and at times creepy. They said Sullivan wrote disturbing poems and generally made staff feel nervous. The day after Sherry Joe's murder, Sullivan did not arrive for his scheduled shift at the library. When he did return days later, he no longer wore his military-style jacket, a behavior change that fueled speculation further. As Peterson took notes of what he was being told, his focus intensified, but it was not information he was able to action. Suspicions and unease did not equal evidence. A few years later, a senior library staff member at Riverside City College sent Peterson a 3-page letter. She remembered him from his visit to the library, asking about Sherry Joe's murder. In the letter, she provided a detailed account of the team's persistent fears regarding Ross Sullivan. At the time of the murder, Sullivan was questioned by police, and his name appeared in the local news as a suspect in the case. Staff at the library had spoken to Riverside police and were told that Sullivan had an alibi for the night Sherry Joe was killed. Instead of easing their concerns, they were worried the alibi might have been given out of fear by someone too intimidated to tell the truth. By this time, Riverside police had their own prime suspect for the murder of Sherry Joe, and it wasn't Ross Sullivan. Listen to bonus episode 3 for the full story of Riverside suspect. Despite the lack of evidence against Ross, the staff at the Riverside City College Library believed that the circumstantial information they had needed to be raised. There were signs that Sullivan was troubled. He talked of spending his spare time writing to keep him occupied and distracted from harming himself or others. There was a poem he wrote that staff members found disturbing rather than inspiring. Staff members didn't like to be alone with him. Sullivan had spoken of escaping from Patton State Mental Hospital in San Bernardino in the years before he joined Riverside College. He told his colleagues he had climbed over the wall to run away, leaving them unsure what to believe. As an English student, Ross Sullivan studied writing styles and cryptography as part of his studies. Both factors could provide a strong foundation for letter writing and the creation of complex ciphers. Just over a year after Sherry Joe's murder, Sullivan transferred from Riverside to a college in Santa Cruz, almost 75 miles south of San Francisco. The only additional information the staff had was that he was later admitted to a psychiatric hospital. The team hoped that by raising their concerns, they could prevent Sullivan from returning to Riverside. They also wanted confirmation, once and for all, that Sullivan wasn't Sherry Joe's killer. The letter left Peterson on edge. There was very little to no evidence against Ross Sullivan, but the circumstantial pointers had sparked a troubling question in his mind. If Ross Sullivan was involved in the murder of Sherry Joe Bates, could he have gone on to become the Zodiac Killer? It was a question that lingered. He knew he had to dig deeper.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Peterson began to investigate Sullivan's past. He uncovered an early photograph from his high school yearbook. The image that stared back at him from the neat white page was startling. Sullivan had short blonde hair and wore thick-rimmed, dark glasses. As Peterson reached for the artist's sketch of the Zodiac Killer, made in 1969 from eyewitness statements, similarity between the two was undeniable. He found more unsettling information as he continued to probe Sullivan's life. In the months after he moved to Santa Cruz, Sullivan had come to the attention of the police. On February 5, 1968, police officers forcefully arrested 26-year-old Sullivan in the street. He was in a dazed state with no clothes on. They had been alerted by an alarmed man who had been trapped inside a phone booth by Sullivan. Taken first to the local police station, he was charged with disorderly conduct and indecent exposure. Concerns for his mental health then saw Sullivan transferred to the General Hospital and put under a 72-hour mental health hold. Soon after, he was moved to an inpatient psychiatric hospital for treatment. It's unknown how long he remained there. Sullivan suffered from schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Both are mental health conditions that can disrupt thought processes and emotional responsiveness. There can be delusions and hallucinations, manic and depressive episodes. They can significantly impact a person's life and their ability to maintain relationships. In the years that followed, Sullivan spent numerous periods in psychiatric hospitals receiving treatment. On March 19, 1977, soon after receiving the Riverside Library's team letter, Peterson wrote to the police detective leading the Zodiac investigation in San Francisco. He asked Detective Dave Toski if he was aware of Ross Sullivan and if his fingerprints could be compared to the prints on file, taken from Paul Stein's taxi, believed to be the prints of the Zodiac Killer. It is not known whether this request was granted, but Ross Sullivan has never been an official suspect in the Zodiac case. Peterson was not the only Zodiac researcher to take interest in Ross Sullivan as a potential suspect. In the countless documentaries made about the Zodiac Killer, some have explored Sullivan for the same reasons Peterson had gained insight about the Riverside staff.
So far, Sal and Ken have zeroed in on two primary suspects. The first, ex-librarian Ross Sullivan. Sullivan fits the physical description of the Zodiac and has eerie connections to an earlier unsolved killing in Riverside, California that the Zodiac took credit for.
He worked at the last place that Sherry Jo Bates was seen alive, at the library.
In addition, Sullivan wore army boots similar to the ones found at the Zodiac's crime scenes. But perhaps most compelling, Sullivan studied cryptology and wrote a detailed paper on creating complex codes.
Zodiac researchers, curious about Sullivan and his potential connections to the case, managed to speak with a friend of Sullivan's brother, who had met Ross on a few occasions. He was able to confirm Sullivan's stature and his mental health history. In 1973, Sullivan was placed under a mental health conservatorship in Santa Cruz. This legal arrangement meant it was felt Ross Sullivan was unable to care for himself due to the severity of his mental illness. Someone close to him, approved by the courts, was given the authority to make decisions for him. 4 years later, in 1977, Ross Sullivan died at his home in Santa Cruz as a result of health complications intensified by significant obesity. There is no solid evidence that Ross Sullivan had any involvement in the murder of Sherry Jo Bates or the Zodiac murders across Northern California. Concerns by those who knew and worked with him at the Riverside Library were valid and real. Sullivan's proximity to the Bates crime scene, his preference for military-style boots, his strong resemblance to the Zodiac police sketch, and his English studies all provide circumstantial evidence when considering Sullivan as a potential suspect. However, some factors didn't support Sullivan as being the Zodiac killer. He was well over 6 feet tall and a large, heavy-set man. This did not match any of the eyewitness accounts of the killer. Riverside police told library staff he had an alibi in the Bates case, and he is not linked to any of the locations of the Zodiac murders. He is an individual who struggled with his mental health for many years, and this itself may have caused his behavior to present as unusual at times. Ultimately, while Ross Sullivan remains a figure of interest, the evidence against him is weak and far from conclusive. His name, however, is now largely regarded as part of the extensive list of suspects in this elusive case. While the Zodiac killer remains unidentified, this list will, in all probability, continue to grow, all in the hopes that one day this killer's true identity will be unearthed.